This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily via the internet address www.parstoday.com/en. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Intelsat 902, and Eutelsat satellite, as well as via internet. You can also listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for more details.
Here we enlighten you with ayahs 85 through 87 of Surah Hajj, recited by Murtaza Rahnema.
A'udhu billahi minash shaytanir rajim. Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. وَمَا خَلَقْنَا السَّمَاوَاتِ وَالْأَرْضَ وَمَا بَيْنَهُمَا إِلَّا بِالْحَقِّ وَإِنَّ السَّاعَةَ لَآتِيَةٌ فَاصْفَحِ الصَّفْحَ الْجَمِيلَ وَمَا خَلَقْنَا السماوات والأرض وما بينهما إلا بالحق وإن الساعة الصفح الجميل إن ربك هو الخلاق العليم ولقد آتيناك سبعا من المثاني والقرآن العظيم ولقد سبعا من المثاني والقرآن العظيم صدق الله العلي العظيم.
In the name of God, the most gracious, the most compassionate. And we did not create the heavens and the earth, and what is between them too, but in truth. And the hour is most surely coming, so turn away with kindly forgiveness. Surely your Lord is the creator of all things, the knowing. And certainly we have given you seven of the oft-repeated verses and the grand Quran.
Thank you. This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
The headlines: Iran says Israel's crimes against Palestinians violate all norms of international law, calling for urgent global action to stop the regime's criminal acts. China says Taiwan's ruling party is endangering the island's peace and stability by colluding with outside powers. In Myanmar, junta confirms carrying out airstrikes on a village in northeast of the country amid growing international calls for accountability. Hello and welcome, everybody. Here in Iranian capital Tehran, this is World News. Our top story for this half hour: Iran says Israeli violations against Palestinians, including terror, massacre, arrest, and destruction of their property, are against the norms of international law and human rights. Foreign Minister Hossein Amir Abdollahian made the comments in a message to the UN Secretary General, the head of the Islamic Cooperation Organization, and foreign ministers of Islamic countries. The top diplomat censured the silence and inaction of the international community regarding Israeli violation of Palestinians' rights. He called for an immediate action against such violations and an end to the daily crimes of Israel against Palestinians. The foreign minister called for the return of Palestinian refugees and the determination of future Palestinian political system through referendum. The remarks were made ahead of the International Women's Day on Friday. And another Israeli spyware resembling the notorious Pegasus program has been used to target journalists and opposition politicians in 10 countries. That's according to Microsoft and Citizen Lab, which studies the abuse of digital technologies. The spy app has been developed by an Israeli firm called Quadream, which was established by a former Israeli military official. The firm is also linked to veterans who made Pegasus. These five people, still unidentified, have been targeted by Quadream. Both Israeli spy apps have been sold to government agencies. Some of the countries deploying Pegasus have been accused of deploying it on peaceful domestic opposition. World leaders, including French President Emmanuel Macron and top politicians and journalists, are believed to have been targeted by Pegasus. Palestinian resistance groups have held a press conference in Gaza to highlight the latest developments in the occupied Palestinian territories. Our correspondent Ola Alassi was there and filed this report.
Following the regular meeting, Palestinian resistance groups held a press conference in Gaza to address the latest developments in Palestine. They touched upon what they called the iconic steadfastness of the Palestinians in the occupied Al-Quds and Al-Aqsa Mosque in the face of the Israeli atrocities during the holy month of Ramadan. They called on the Palestinian people across the occupied territories to maintain their presence in the holy mosque, especially during the last 10 days of Ramadan.
We call on Palestinians to set out for Al-Aqsa Mosque and to intensify their presence in large numbers to abort the Israeli plans. We hold Israeli occupation accountable for any future escalation if the violations continue in the Holy Mosque.
The Palestinian resistance groups reflected on Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's recent press conference, saying it exposed the fragility of the regime. They added, "His threats are not going to intimidate the Palestinians. Instead, it's going to be faced by more resistance actions."
We expect that we are heading to a bone-breaking battle with the Israel occupation, especially amid this vulnerability of the occupying regime. And Netanyahu's attempts to reflect this weakness through opening more fronts at his cabinet. This indicates that all options are available across all fronts against the Israel occupation.
Just days ahead of International Quds Day, the resistance groups held international support for the Palestinian cause, saying such efforts will foil the Israeli regime's plans to annex the Palestinian lands.
"As we observe the Quds Day, which represents a victory for Palestine, the Al-Quds and the Al-Aqsa Mosque, we salute the Arab and Islamic countries, the axes of the resistance, and on top of them the Islamic Republic of Iran, for their efforts and active role in supporting the Palestinian cause and backing the Palestinian resistance. We call on the Islamic nation and to stand in solidarity with the Palestinian people against Israeli conspiracies."
Palestinian resistance groups in Gaza retaliated the brutal Israeli raid on the Al-Aqsa Mosque by rocket attacks, while Palestinians in the West Bank intensified their resistance against the Israeli forces.
The Israeli occupation forces are escalating violence in the occupied Palestinian territories, especially during the holy month of Ramadan. Observers say the situation might explode at any point in the future. However, the Palestinian resistance say that they are committed to defend the Palestinian lands. Ala Al-Asib, Gaza.
9 Arab countries will hold a summit in Saudi Arabia later this week to discuss Syria's return to the Arab League. Qatar's foreign ministry said a meeting would be held Friday to discuss the circumstances in Syria. Foreign ministers from Iraq, Jordan, Egypt, as well as the Persian Gulf Cooperation Council will meet in Jeddah. Top Arab diplomats have confirmed that the presence of Syria's president in an Arab League summit next month would be on the table. Pressure has been mounting in recent months for greater engagement with Damascus. Syria has been under sanctions since the start of the crisis in 2011. The new development follows President Bashar al-Assad's visit to the United Arab Emirates and Oman. Riyadh has said it's in talks with Damascus about resuming consular services. Yemen and Saudi Arabia are set to exchange prisoners against a backdrop of rising hopes for peace after more than 8 years of Saudi-led war on its southern neighbor. A prisoner swap involving hundreds of detainees from both sides under a deal will last 3 days from Thursday. An official has been quoted as saying that nearly 900 prisoners will be flown between Yemen and Saudi Arabia. It is the biggest prisoner exchange since October 2020 and will be facilitated by teams and flights of the Red Cross. The agreement was struck days after a Saudi delegation held talks with Yemen's Ansarullah movement in Sana'a in a bid to discuss a permanent ceasefire. Riyadh and its allies launched a devastating war and blockade on the impoverished country back in 2015 to reinstate a friendly regime there. The UN says hundreds of thousands of Yemenis have been killed since then. China says Taiwan's ruling party is putting the island's peace and stability at risk by joining hands with outside powers in a bid to gain independence.
The Democratic Progressive Party's collusion with external forces in seeking independence and provocation is the greatest threat to peace and stability in the Taiwan Strait. Without a stable situation in the Taiwan Strait and peaceful development of cross-strait relations, it will be impossible for Taiwan to have a stable and good environment for investment and business, which will directly affect the island's economic development and the vital interests of the Taiwanese people.
The spokeswoman for China's Taiwan Affairs Office also warned the island against challenging the One China principle. She said the DPP is acting as a pawn of the United States. Beijing has been angered by the Taiwanese president's recent stopovers in the U.S. on her way to and from Central America. Tensions mounted further after Tsai Ing-wen met with the U.S. House Speaker and expressed Taiwan's determination to defend freedom and democracy. Beijing considers Taiwan as part of its territory and is opposed to its nexus with the U.S. China also launched military exercises around Taiwan in reaction to Tsai's meeting with Kevin McCarthy. Meanwhile, Taiwan said 14 Chinese fighter jets have crossed the median line of the Taiwan Strait in the last 24 hours. Myanmar's ruling junta is facing international outcry over deadly airstrikes on a gathering in the northwestern Sagaing region. The junta has confirmed Tuesday's attacks, which reportedly claimed at least 100 lives, including children. The airstrikes targeted a ceremony of village, which the military claims was organized by opponents of the 2021 coup. UN Chief Antonio Guterres has strongly condemned the attack and urged those responsible to be held accountable. Several Western countries, including Germany and the U.S., have also reacted to the killings. The incident is the latest in a string of deadly raids by the junta since overthrowing an elected government in March. More than 30 people were killed by the army at a monastery in southern Shan state. Round two of a strike by junior doctors has gotten underway in England, with some authorities calling it the most disruptive industrial action in the history of the National Health Service. It's the latest in a wave of public sector strikes over pay and conditions since last year, Saeed Pudas reports from a picket line in central London.
The UK government calls their pay demands unrealistic. Junior doctors say that's simply what they are worth. 4 days of strikes, with the government yet to come up with what the unions call a credible offer.
The strikes come in the wake of a four-day bank holiday weekend, causing a level of disruption unseen since public sector strikes began last summer. But the doctors here tell us they were left with no choice.
Junior doctors, all qualified doctors training to reach consultant level, account for about half of all physicians working within the NHS, with pay packets ranging between $36,000 and $71,000 a year. But pay, the doctors say, is one reason they're on the picket line.
The NHS is in a crisis. We are in recruitment and retention crisis when it comes to junior doctors. At the moment, there are over 7 million patients on the NHS waiting list. And to put that into perspective, it's more than the entire population of Scotland. This is only going to get worse as junior doctors are leaving in their droves to countries where they feel better valued.
The British Medical Journal says last year alone, nearly 7,000 UK doctors applied for a certificate to work abroad, mainly in Australia, New Zealand and Canada. The British Medical Association, which represents doctors, is asking for a pay rise of 35%. The government says that pay demand is out of step with other settlements in the public sector and accuses the BMA of maintaining a militant stance. The striking doctors disagree. A future that is now in doubt with a push for privatization. This week's action by junior doctors will mean an estimated 200,000 appointments, procedures, even time-sensitive cancer treatments delayed. This is the latest in a wave of industrial action by public sector workers in the UK, demanding pay hikes to match inflation that exceeds 10%. Underpaid, overworked, and demoralized, these doctors work for a national health service that's teetering, stricken by strikes and mired in dispute. Saeed Purizip, London.
Muslims in Iran have marked Laylatul Qadr, or the Night of Destiny, which is considered the holiest night of the year. They hold vigils until dawn and recite the Holy Quran. Salman Kujri reports.
It is a night which Quran says is better than 1,000 months. Iranians have marked Laylatul Qadr, or the Night of Glory, in the holy month of Ramadan. The Night of Glory is an extremely important night for Muslims. The Holy Book of Quran says angels descend to the earth from the heaven by God's leave on this night to carry out divine commands.
The Night of Destiny in the holy month of Ramadan is of great importance. The Holy Quran was revealed to Prophet Muhammad on this night. Whatever good deeds you do on this night, it's like you have been doing it for 1,000 months. It's an opportunity to get closer to God Almighty.
Since this is a special occasion, many Muslims spend the night holding vigils until dawn and reciting the Quran, as well as a variety of supplications pleading for God's forgiveness and blessings.
This night holds special significance to Muslims because they believe on this night God's blessings and mercy are abundant and their sins are forgiven.
The night's holiness is believed to make it a very good time for prayers to be answered.
Laylatul Qadr, or the Night of Destiny, is one of the major blessings of Ramadan. The most subtle way to obtain benefit from the blessings of this night is to stay awake for the whole night and spend it in prayers.
On this night, whoever establishes prayer out of sincere faith and hoping to attain Allah's reward will see all his past sins forgiven. All Muslims try to seize this unique opportunity to re-establish their spiritual bonds with their Creator.
According to traditions, praying during this night has rewards much more than praying for the entire life. The holy month of Ramadan reaches its peak during the Nights of Glory. Muslims make best use of these nights, praying for forgiveness and yearning for spiritual uplift. Salman Kojuri, Tehran.
A batch of U.S. documents leaked on social media shows Washington has serious concerns about Ukraine's capacity to defend against Russia. One top secret document said tough Russian defenses and Ukrainian deficiencies in training and munition supplies will probably exacerbate casualties during offensives by Ukraine. Another secret document detailed the dire state of Ukrainian air defenses. The document said Kiev's ability to provide air defenses which protect the front line will be completely reduced by May the 23rd. Scores of highly sensitive documents have been circulating on social media for months, but only began to receive media attention last week. The U.S. is now trying to remove them. U.S. Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin says that Washington will, quote, turn over every rock to find the source of the leak. The CIA Director William Burns has also described the leak as deeply unfortunate, adding a quite intense investigation is going on to find its origin.
A new trove of classified U.S. military documents surfaced on social media in recent days. The disclosure marks Washington's worst national security breach in many years. The leaked documents include details about Ukraine's lack of ammunition, U.S. intelligence methods used against Russia, and embarrassing evidence pointing to U.S. spying on close allies such as Ukraine, South Korea, and Israel. The White House National Security Council spokesman John Kirby said U.S. President Joe Biden had been informed of the breach late last week and was being kept informed of developments. However, when asked whether the leak has so far been contained and whether other documents have yet to be released, Kirby replied, "I don't know.
We don't know who's responsible for this, and we don't know if they have more that they intend to post. So we're watching this and monitoring it as best we can. But the truth and the honest answer to your question is we don't know. And is that a matter of concern to us? You're darn right it is."
The Pentagon has referred the leak to the Justice Department for criminal investigation. The documents have a range of classifications, including top secret and no foreign, which stands for not releasable to foreign nationals, suggesting the leaker is American. The documents were printed and folded, possibly to put in a pocket, before being photographed and uploaded. The release appears to be the most serious public leak of classified information in years, although it is believed to be much smaller in scale and scope compared to the 700,000 documents, videos, and diplomatic cables that appeared on the WikiLeaks website in 2013.
And that brings us to an end here on this edition of World News. Do stay tuned, though. Bye.
This is the Heart of Life pounding. IRIB English Radio.
Supplication on Wednesdays. In the name of Allah, the All-Merciful, the All-Compassionate. Praise belongs to Allah, who appointed the night to be a garment, and sleep for a rest, and day he appointed for a rising. To thee belongs praise, for thou roused me from my sleep. And hadst thou willed, thou wouldst have made it everlasting, an everlasting praise that will never be cut off, and whose number the creatures will never count. O Allah, to thee belongs praise, for thou created, then proportioned, and ordained, and decreed, and gave death, and bestowed life, and made sick, and healed, and made well, and afflicted, and sat upon the throne, and encompassed the kingdom. I supplicate thee with the supplication of one whose mediation is weak, whose stratagems have been cut off, whose term has drawn near, whose expectation from this world has shrunk, whose neediness for thy mercy has intensified, whose remorse for his neglect has become great. whose slips and stumbles have become many, and whose repentance is devoted sincerely to thy face. So bless Muhammad, the seal of the prophets, and his household, the good, the pure. And provide me with the intercessions of Muhammad, Allah bless him and his household, and deprive me not of his companionship. Surely thou art the most merciful of the merciful. O Allah, decree for me on Wednesday four things. Induce me to be strong in obedience to thee, to be joyful in worshipping thee, to be desirous of thy reward, and to abstain from that which would make incumbent upon me thy painful punishment. Thou art gentle to whom thou wilt.
God's Month. In the name of Allah, the Compassionate, the Merciful, Salam and welcome to another episode of this series. These days and nights remind us of the martyrdom of the epitome of justice, Ali, peace upon him. He was at the home of his younger daughter, Umm Kulthum. Imam Ali broke his fast with a piece of bread and a little salt. He was restless and left the room several times and looked at the sky. He said, "By Allah, I am not lying, and I have not been lied. This is the night in which my martyrdom has been promised." The Imam stood for prayer till dawn. At dawn, Imam Ali left for the mosque with slow steps. A few moments later, his voice echoed in the mosque, and the faithful poured to the mosque to stand behind him for Fajr ritual prayer. But just as he raised his head from prostration, the sword of ignorance struck his head, and his beard was dyed in blood. At this moment, Imam Ali, peace upon him, said in a distinct voice, "By the Lord of the Kaaba, I succeeded." Then the voice of Gabriel was heard reverberating everywhere. "By Allah, the pillars of guidance broke down, and the stars of knowledge of prophets became dark, and the banners of God-weariness fell, and Allah's firm cord was disconnected." The government of Imam Ali, peace upon him, lasted only for 5 years. But this short period was enough for people to taste and feel the true meaning of justice and differentiate between the divine and other leaders. Imam Ali was not hungry for power and employed power only for serving people. His government relied on mercy and affection. He considered people the members of his own family. In a letter to one of his governors, Malik Ashtar, the Imam first introduces himself as God's servant and then writes, Place in your heart mercy and good behavior with people and treat them kindly and well. Never be as a bloodthirsty beast of prey which seeks the opportunity to devour them. Imam Ali was the highest example of the last ayah of Surah Fath, a part of which reads, Muhammad, the apostle of Allah, and those with him are hard against the faithless and merciful amongst themselves. The commander of the faithful was so kind and humble towards orphans and destitute, but he was the most valiant and powerful combatant in the battlefield and defending the oppressed. In the Battle of Khaybar against the treacherous Jews, several of the commanders failed to conquer the main castle called Qamus. Thus, the Prophet said, Tomorrow I will give the banner to the person who loves Allah, and Allah and his apostle love him. The next day, he gave the banner to Imam Ali, and he broke the door of the castle and conquered. The martyrdom of Imam Ali, peace upon him, took place on the nights of Qadr. His words and morals are exigently needed in every era, especially in the modern era, while mankind is captivated in the hands of tyrants and those who claim to be the friends of humanity, whereas they are worst enemies of human race. Imam Ali considered the Quran as the reviver of human heart. He said that the Quran removes unfaith, misguidance, darkness, and hypocrisy, and casts the light of guidance to the heart. He says, Look, this Quran is the advisor who does not deceive, and the guide who does not mislead, and the speaker who never lies. No one becomes a companion of the Quran except that it increases to him or decreases from him, increases his guidance and decreases his blindness of heart and misguidance. Look, he who needs nothing with the Quran will not be needless without it. So seek your remedies from the Quran and ask for help from the Quran in hardships, as it is the cure to the greatest diseases, namely unfaith, hypocrisy, rebellion, and misguidance. Thus, request your demands from God with the Quran and get close to God via the love of Quran. Imam Ali, peace upon him, believes that thinking is a key to grant life to the heart. He stresses that to keep the heart alive, one should keep aloof from evil companions. He says, Consorting with virtuous people revives the heart. In the final moments of his life in this world, the Imam was highly considerate towards the people and their faith. In his testament to his elder son, Imam Hassan, peace upon him, Imam Ali, peace upon him, testified the oneness of Allah and the mission of the Prophet of Islam and continued, O Hassan, I enjoin upon you, all my children, my progeny, and anyone of the faithful who gets this letter of me to observe God-wariness. Try not to leave this world except as Muslims. Hold fast all together to Allah's cord and do not be divided. I heard from the Prophet that he said, Reforming among people is better than prayer and fasting. And that garage and corruption among people destroys religion, and there is no power but with Allah. Imam Ali, peace upon him, continued in his testament, "Be heedful of your kinsmen and have relations with them so that Allah will take your calculation easily. Consider Allah in treating orphans. Do not leave them full and hungry from time to time. Beware that they are not disrespected before you. I heard the Prophet saying, 'He who takes over the expenses of an orphan so that his needs are fulfilled, Allah will make paradise obligatory for him, just like the eater of the possessions of an orphan, for whom he makes the fire obligatory.' Consider Allah about the Quran so that others do not take the lead. Consider Allah about your neighbors as the Prophet has recommended on them. Consider Allah about the house of your Lord, the Kaaba. Do not let it be empty as long as you are alive. Because if Allah's house is left, you will not be given respite. The least souvenir that the pilgrim returns with is the forgiveness of his past sins. Consider Allah about the ritual prayer, which is the best deed and the pillar of your religion. Consider Allah about zakat, as it extinguishes your Lord's wrath. Consider Allah about the month of Ramadan, as fasting is the shield against the fire. Consider Allah about the poor and the destitute. Make them partners in your life. Consider Allah about jihad, a struggle in the way of Allah, with your properties and souls. Two people struggle in the way of Allah, the guided ruler and the leader and the one who obeys them." These were parts of the testament of Imam Ali to his son Imam Hassan, and indeed to the Islamic Ummah and the entire humanity. We hope that God will help us follow in his steps to live happily in this world and to reach eternal bliss in the hereafter.
Imam Ali, peace be upon him, said, "The Lord Most High has chosen for us certain followers, Shiites, who assist us. If we are joyful, they are joyful. And if we are sorrowful and sad, they are sorrowful and sad."
harsh sanctions against Iran. January 12, 2017, Tehran, Mehrabad Airport. A new airplane has arrived in Iran after more than three decades. Purchasing this airplane from Airbus Company was made possible by the Iran nuclear deal, known as the JCPOA. In 2018 alone, Iranian aviation companies transported some 30 million passengers via local and international flights. The task was achieved by 18 airlines, with a total of 150 active airplanes. Iran's civil aviation industry was one of the first sectors to be restricted and sanctioned during the first days of the Islamic Revolution of 1979. As the scope of the sanctions expanded in the following years, the development of this industry was slowed down to an extent that some of the neighboring countries that had founded their aviation industry decades after Iran got ahead. Despite the pressure on it and the loss of money and lives due to the existing demand in the country and the support given by the government, Iran's aviation industry was able to survive and continue its activities. Now, the question that comes to mind is how an industry which was completely imported from outside not only remained in business, but also achieved growth. How were they able to purchase airplanes? How did Iran find the professional human resources and specialists? Do international regulations match the sanctions imposed on the industry? In an industry which the life cycle of all parts and equipment are inspected under international regulations, how did Iran get the spare parts and certificates needed to continue to work? When the Iran nuclear deal was signed in 2015, what opportunities opened to the industry?
The JCPOA for aviation was not fair play. They designed a very dirty play against the aviation industry of Iran.
This is an inside story of efforts made to keep this very modern industry running, despite the harsh sanctions levied against Iran. With the establishment of companies such as Iranian Airways and Persian Air Services in the 1940s, Iran's civil aviation industry began its work. However, the official start of this industry in Iran dates back to the year 1962. On February 24 of that year, the government ordered the merger of Iran Airways and Persian Air Services, establishing the Iranian National Airline, or Iran Air, as a state-run flag carrier air service company. Iran Air, which is also known as HOMA, grew quickly due to the support lent by the government and in the 1970s blossomed into a successful airline. In 1975, Iran Air was the fastest-growing airline in the world, with dozens of flights to European countries per week. Iran was also among the first countries in the world to purchase the Boeing 747SP, which was the most modern airplane of the time. After buying the aircraft, Iran was able to launch one of the longest non-stop air services between Tehran and New York at the time. Captain Abdullahi was in charge of Iran Air flight operations back then. Iran Air was in full blossom. However, when it came to maintenance, it was totally dependent on foreign companies. With the 1979 Islamic Revolution in Iran, many Westerners who worked in various industries, including the aviation industry, left the country. The exit of these Western specialists was a big shock to the industry, prompting the local forces to fill the void. 4 days after the U.S. Embassy takeover in Tehran, on November 8, 1979, the control tower at New York's JFK Airport contacted an Iran Air airliner as it was approaching for landing. It informed the captain that due to political tensions between the United States and Iran, the passenger plane had been denied permission for landing in all U.S. airports. The aircraft was then forced to fly on to Canada for landing. From then on, all flights between Tehran and New York, among the longest non-stop flight routes, were canceled. Over the course of the next 4 decades, and under different pretexts, the scope of U.S.-imposed sanctions on Iran expanded. U.S.-imposed sanctions on Iran included a network of interconnected restrictions imposed on the Iranian nation by both the U.S. President and Congress. The sanctions targeted economic investments in Iran, the oil and aviation industries, science and technology firms, and even the country's central bank. As a result of the unilateral U.S. sanctions, other countries, too, were practically unable to do business with the Islamic Republic. This was because the sanctions targeting the international business firms and governments which wanted to do business with Iran would either be punished by the U.S. or risk losing their ties with the U.S. In the past couple of years, it has practically become impossible for Iran to purchase airplanes or its spare parts from manufacturing companies across the globe. This dire situation has forced Iranian airlines to either seek spare parts via unofficial channels or through third parties. The sanctions ban Iran from obtaining equipment and spare parts, which use more than 10% by value of U.S. technology or services for their production. The situation has prevented Iran from purchasing new airplanes for decades, turning Iran's air fleet into one of the oldest in the world. But how do the sanctions work, and what impact do they have on the country's aviation industry? To better understand this matter, different aspects must be reviewed separately.
Unfortunately, the sanction we have imposed on us has impacted the entire air transport industry. It's not only airline. We have seen that also airport, air navigation system, also the process of transferring money from Iranian airline to other airlines have been affected.
Due to the high prices of new airplanes, they are purchased via companies that provide financial services. Finance companies act as go-betweens and sign a contract with the buyer to purchase an airplane from the manufacturer.
We are looking everywhere in the market, but we cannot lease aircraft from the very famous leasing companies because they don't want work with Iran due to lack of OFAC license. So we have to go to the open market brokers, which it takes time and, of course, more expensive for us.
An unofficial market with limited sellers in it, in addition to the problems related to financing the purchases and the difficulty of transferring money. Iranian airlines were left with few options, forcing them over the years to buy any type of airplane that they could get their hands on. Having an old fleet is not a problem per se, as long as the necessary maintenance is done to the planes and the spare parts needed for them are available. However, in Iran's case, the bans and restrictions they employed for the routine repairs and maintenance led to complications. Sometimes not finding an essential part, like an engine, makes an airplane useless.
737 fleet in Osman Airlines during 25 years of operation has never faced with any incident or accident. Very safe fleet for Osman Airlines. But we found that due to lack of support by Boeing, we are not able more to continue operation of his aircraft. By these means, we ground 3 aircraft 737 with 500 seats. We lose this revenue, which was very good revenue for us, but we respect the safety.
In practice, such limitations have a real impact on flight operations and force the schedules to change. At Iranian Airlines, delays and cancellations of flights due to technical problems often occur. Under such circumstances, in order to maintain safety measures, there is no other choice. These delays and cancellations are not only harmful to airlines' income and planning, but also have a negative psychological impact on passengers. To hear a flight has been delayed or canceled, even if it is for non-technical problems, can make passengers anxious. Another odd problem related to the sanctions is that airports in other countries refuse to give jet fuel to Iranian planes on international routes. After the Iran nuclear deal, the ban on fuel was removed. However, as the United States pulled out of the deal, the situation became more complicated than before. Sometimes foreign airports would refuse to give Iranian flights even the most basic services. The issue, which experts have contradicting views about, is the degree to which the numerous restrictions have affected the safety of Iranian flights. Despite some experts saying that in the present situation, Iranian flights are unsafe, others working in this field believe it to be otherwise. Aside from its short-term impacts, the U.S. sanctions have had long-term negative impact on the country. Iran is a huge country with an area four times that of Germany, with a vast range of geographical features, including cold mountainous regions in the north and west, massive hot deserts in the central parts, and warm and humid coasts in the Persian Gulf. One of the best ways to decrease the length of time required to reach and connect remote locations of the country is to provide sustainable and balanced development by expanding the aviation industry. Despite the high portion of airports across the country, due to the sanctions, Iran is not capable of buying small short-range airplanes to provide air service to them. That is why many of these airports are hardly active. This problem has slowed down the economic growth and development in remote areas. Due to the global nature of aviation, slapping sanctions on a part of the aviation industry will have repercussions that go beyond the limits of the local airlines and the people of the region. Iran's unique geographical location prompts many international flights to use its airspace to pass from the south of the Persian Gulf over to the west or north of the country. In order to provide satisfactory services for the international flights flying over Iran and passing through its airspace, airports must be equipped with modern, updated technology to match latest standards. In December 2018, a Norwegian MAX 737 jetliner flying from Dubai to Stockholm lost one of its engines when passing over Iran. The aircraft was forced to make an emergency landing in Shiraz International Airport in southern Iran. The incident coincided with the temporary shutdown of the U.S. government. As a result, the jetliner was grounded for 70 days until the Norwegian company was able to receive an OFAC license to transfer a new engine to Iran. During the period that the U.S. sanctions had been imposed on the nation, Iran's Civil Aviation Organization has made many efforts at various international bodies to inform the global community of the dangers caused by these sanctions for the aviation industry. In 2004, Iran presented a report on the negative impacts of the U.S. sanctions to the 35th General Assembly of the ICAO. In that report, Iran detailed how the sanctions on its aviation industry was doing harm. The reasons stated by Iran for lifting the sanctions were based on the contradictions that the sanctions had with the clear objectives stated in the Chicago Convention,
which is regarded as the international treaty for the aviation industry and has been signed by all members. In several articles of that convention, it has been reiterated that safety is the number one priority for the aviation industry. Article 4 of the treaty says, each member state agrees not to use civil aviation for any purpose inconsistent with the aims of this convention. Article 44 calls on the members to meet the needs of the people of the world for safe, regular, efficient, and economical air transport, avoid discrimination between contracting states, and promote safety of flight in international air navigation. ICAO deployed a fact-finding mission to Iran to investigate the issues cited in the report. In May 2005, the ICAO issued a report based on the findings of its fact-finding team. The report noted that the U.S. imposed sanctions had threatened the safety of aviation in Iran. It clearly stated that the U.S. sanctions were in contradiction to the spirit and letter of the Chicago Convention, describing the sanctions as a tool for foreign policy. It noted that aviation safety, which affects human life and human rights, stands above political differences. At the end, the report concluded that it was the ICAO's responsibility as a UN agency to take the lead to lift the U.S. imposed sanctions. Despite all the efforts carried out by Iran and the ICAO, there was no progress made in lifting the sanctions by this means.
The problem is that those ruling, they don't have any enforcement power. They cannot enforce. Just they give some sort of recommendation. The recommendations given to U.S. government that really they are spearheading the sanction, which they don't pay attention to that.
As a result of years of limitations and pressure, Iranian airlines were forced to find alternative ways for their survival. To achieve this goal, the training of specialists in this field was the first step. The airlines made their utmost effort to reduce their dependency on foreign specialists and foreign companies. This could be one of the major achievements of Iranian airlines during this period. Recently, Iran Air announced that it had carried out the C-check of an advanced airplane.
I remember 10 years ago, I wanted to ship one engine to UK. We didn't have engine transportation stand. We asked one of the very famous factory in Iran to build us, and they did. Very nice stand with all specific specification and really accurate dimensions. When we sent engine to UK, they asked us, where is the license for this transportation stand? Why you put our brand on a stand which we don't know about the manufacturer of the stand? Today, we cut to ship engine to that facility. We do repair in-house.
The production of spare parts and equipment that could be made locally was also added in the program so Iran could supply some of the parts it needed inside the country. Each year, Iran holds an aviation exhibition in Kish Island to provide a venue for some part manufacturers to showcase their products. Ibrahimi Advanced Simulator Company has been building simulators in one of Tehran's suburbs in the past years. This company, despite its limited resources, carried out its activities using investments from the private sector. Building a flight simulator is a very complex task, and it is normally achieved through the interaction of several separate firms working in cooperation with the manufacturer of the airplane. This company has recently built a simulator for one of the most modern airplanes in the world. Ibrahimi says companies from outside the country are interested in buying the product that was made in his small firm. In 2015, when the world powers on Iran after years of negotiations finally signed the nuclear agreement,
a large portion of the nuclear sanctions imposed by the United States were lifted. In a short time, broad-ranging negotiations got underway for investments in different sectors of the Iranian industries. Airbus and Boeing, as the biggest manufacturers of airplanes and spare parts, came to Iran and signed several contracts worth billions of dollars. Signing these contracts would make a huge profit for them, and Iran's aviation industry would be revived. Iran Air signed contracts for 100 Airbus airplanes, 80 Boeing jetliners, and 20 ATR aircraft. Iran Asiman Airline signed a deal with Boeing Company for 30 MAX 737 jetliners, which could later be doubled to 60. In June 2017, Airbus announced an initial contract had been signed with Iran Air Tour Company for 45 airplanes, as well as 28 more airplanes for Zagros Company. About 1 week before the U.S. President Donald Trump officially entered the White House, the first Airbus airplane arrived in Tehran, amid a lot of excitement and media hype.
We are committed to partnering in areas like air traffic management, like training of pilots, and of course all the necessary support to Iran Air, who will become one of the greatest Middle East airlines, I'm sure of it.
In the meantime, other Iranian airlines had started talks to buy new airplanes, while Trump was threatening to pull out of the Iran nuclear deal.
The Iran deal, which may be the single worst deal I've ever seen drawn by anybody.
The news alarmed the airplane manufacturers that had signed contracts with the Iranians and were making efforts to save the deals.
In a few moments, I will sign a presidential memorandum to begin reinstating U.S. nuclear sanctions on the Iranian regime. We will be instituting the highest level of economic sanction.
The move was a big shock to international markets, in particular the aviation industry. Airbus, Boeing, and ATR sent representatives to hold talks with the U.S. government so they could save their contracts. Despite all their efforts, OFAC licenses were revoked, and all the contracts were eventually canceled. As a result, after long negotiations to buy more than 250 airplanes, Iran Air received only 16, and once again, efforts to renovate and develop Iran's civil aviation industry ended in failure.
They designed a very dirty play against the aviation industry of Iran. They arrive here, they open many gates in front of us, we close those gates that we had before, and then after, they closed the new recently opened doors.
One of the last legal actions for lifting the U.S. sanctions had been to lodge a formal complaint at the International Court of Justice. After the U.S. quit the JCPOA, Iran filed a complaint against the United States based on the 1955 Treaty of Amity between the two countries.
Unanimously, the United States of America, in accordance with its obligations under the 1955 Treaty of Amity, shall remove any impediments to the free exportation to the territory of the Islamic Republic of Iran of medicines and medical devices, foodstuffs and agricultural commodities, and spare parts, equipment, and associated services, including warranty, maintenance, repair services, and inspections necessary for the safety of aviation.
In response to the court verdict, the U.S. questioned the jurisdiction of the Court of Law, which is one of the highest regarded legal institutions in the world, and also pulled out of the treaty.
You know, we're disappointed that the court failed to recognize that it has no jurisdiction to issue any order relating to these sanctions measures with the United States. I am therefore announcing today that the United States